The president pushes his stalled infrastructure plan today. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. President Trump will be speaking in Ohio later today at an engineering training facility to tout his infrastructure plan, a plan the White House had hoped would be passed by the end of the year. It's stalled in recent weeks. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more on what we expect to hear from the president.
The president today will likely bring up a report his Council of Economic Advisers published yesterday that says a 10-year, $1.5 trillion program of infrastructure investment could add between a tenth and two-tenths of a percent in GDP growth. But the plan's getting pushback from both sides of the aisle. Many Republicans don't like it because it calls for spending $200 billion in federal funds. The idea is that money will galvanize cities and states to raise much of their own money to construct and repair roads, bridges, dams, and railroads. That would likely mean higher taxes. Democrats don't like it because they say it relies too much on these public-private partnerships to do this kind of thing. Many analysts have said the odds of any major legislation passing as the midterm elections near is close to zero.
Marketplace's Andy Euler. And let's take a quick check of the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.4%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 4 to 7/10% range, with the Dow future up 85 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.77%. It's been 6 months since Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico, devastating the island physically and only adding to its severe financial troubles. Now the island's governor is pushing an austerity plan he hopes will turn things around for the bankrupt U.S. territory. He believes the plan will allow Puerto Rico to pay back half the principal on its debt, which totals more than $120 billion. But the cuts could be painful, Marketplace's Aaron Schrank reports.
The planned measures would consolidate and privatize government departments and cut aid to cities and schools. Mary Ellen Tai at DebtWire Municipals says bondholders are skeptical.
We haven't seen audited financials out of Puerto Rico since 2014.
The current plan depends on $70 billion in Maria recovery funds coming from Congress and private insurers. Law professor Rafael Cox Alomar is an expert on Puerto Rico. He says that's a stretch.
It overestimates the influx of cash and underestimates the chilling effect the reductions in governmental spending will have.
About a quarter of Puerto Rico's workers are employed by government departments and agencies that are on the chopping block. Labor organizer Julio Lopez Verona in San Juan says whispers of a May 1st general strike are getting louder.
There's a feeling of frustration, anger, and willingness to start moving.
10% of Puerto Rico's population moved away from the island over the past decade. Lopez Verona fears more austerity will only accelerate that exodus. I'm Aaron Schrank for Marketplace.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will meet South Korean President Moon Jae-in at a village on the border between the two Koreas on April 27th. This announcement coming out of South Korea today. This would be the third time since the Korean War ended in 1953 that the leaders of North and South Korea would meet face-to-face. The key topic is the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. For a look at how we got here, we are joined by Bill Brown. He teaches courses on the economics of China and Korea at Georgetown University, and he's retired from a four-decade-long career with the federal government. He's also author of a new paper out arguing how UN sanctions on North Korea are decentralizing the economy and market and making it actually more productive. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
So you argue that a face-to-face meeting between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un is a good idea, but also made possible by the fact that U.S. sanctions and economic pressure from China have worked. What's your evidence for that?
Yeah, you know, for a long time, I didn't think the sanctions were working. What's changed, though, is China. China has come to the plate with its near embargo on imports from North Korea. They release very detailed data every month on their trade with everybody, of course, but especially their trade with North Korea. And it has shown, for example, the January data, 2018 compared to January 2017, their imports from North Korea were down 85%. Their exports to North Korea were down also, but down about 30%. So that creates a huge trade deficit for North Korea.
Well, one thing you've suggested is to use sanctions in a way that actually might develop North Korea's economy. What do you mean by that?
North Korea is a very odd economy now. Everything is planned by the state and the distribution is by ration rather than by money. Probably about half the economy is still working off this command or what we call a ration system. The other half of the economy is basically now a market economy. So there are two economies overlapping each other. What's becoming more apparent, though, is the money economy, the market economy, is eroding the state economy. The sanctions, all this work from the outside world, in my view, is sort of crippling the state side of the economy. It's allowing the market economy to develop, and not nicely, it's kind of chaotic, but it's growing. It's kind of a race in a way between the nuclear weapons part and the market part.
What reason is there to believe that any amount of sanctions will cause North Korea to give up its biggest bargaining chip, nuclear weapons?
During this whole process, as they've been developing their nuclear weapons, their state economy, their socialist economy, has gone in reverse. Now it's just incredibly weak. I think the right kind of policies might make them realize they've made a bad choice and that the nuclear weapons are actually are more of a danger to them than they are a security blanket.
William Brown, adjunct professor at Georgetown University. He's also worked for the State Department, the U.S. Embassy in Seoul, and the CIA over many decades. Professor Brown, thanks for the time.
Thank you.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.